The beginning of Reish Lamech Daleth is concerned with two questions. The question of who and the question of with what. The question of who can do a milah and the question of what sort of kli does one use to do a milah. So the question of who emerges from the sugya in the primary sugya of Avodah Zarah, Chavav HaBeit Chav Zayim Ra'alef, in the context of medical treatment between Jews and non-Jews. So the Gemara unfolds what's ends up being a 3 or 4-way machlokas hatanan about mila al yedei nachri. A lot of epochs, a lot of potential epochs, and the mapach this and mapach that one. I believe the way everything lands is essentially there are primarily three sheets of hatanan with a twist. One is that milas nachri is kasher, and that appears to be at the end, the machshita of the Tanur of Yehuda. Tanur of Meir says we generally would not use milas nachri because of a chashash sakana. But in a situation where I'm comfortable that this nachri is going to do a good and safe job, a rofe mumcha, so then it's fine. And the Tanur of Yehuda Hanasi, Rabbi, he is of the opinion that milas akam is fundamentally problematic, not just a practical concern of pikuach nefesh, but mitzad hilchas mila, not just mitzad shmiras hanefesh, but he also thinks mitzad hilchas mila, milas akam is pasal. So those are the three shitos, kasher, chashash sakana, or pasal be'etzem. It's worth noting that within the approach of kasher, you sort of have a sub-shita, or a fourth sheet, and that's Tanur Reb Yossi, who thinks that not only is milas nachri kasher, but even milas kusi is kasher. And the Tanur Reb Yossi says, there's no need for mila lishma. As long as the act of mila is done, that is sufficient. Tosfos law and Tosfos, the Tapuch of Zayim Ralf, who discusses, makes the points interesting. Usually, we assume that an act of a nachri is not going to be considered lishma al pidin. Whereas here, it appears that Rabbi Yehuda, the Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda are splitting that shita that the milas akam is kasher. Rabbi Yossi says, even milas kusi is kasher, even though he's going to do shlo lishma, I don't care about lishma. Meaning Rabbi Yehuda holds, on the other hand, that you do need milas lishma, and yet he's machshir b'milas nachri. That's the Tosfos has a discussion. That even though there are other cases, areas of halacha where we require lishma, where we therefore disqualify a nachri, for instance, ksivas get, perhaps. The Tosfos explains a topic that comes up elsewhere, stam lishma. The mila is stam lishma. The default position is that you're doing this for l'shem mitzvah, and Tosfos understands that the real concern of mila shelo lishma would be mila l'shem avodah zarah, which is more of a concern with the kusi than nachri. So that's sort of a detail within that shita which we do not accept. Within the shita that milas akum is kasher, so then is that based on not needing lishma or not? The machlok is Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. And again, Rabbi Meir agrees also fundamentally that milas akum is kasher. He just raises a concern, a pikuach nefesh concern. Should we trust that the nachri will do a safe job? And so those are... In a sense, three different variations, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Meir, three different variations on saying that fundamentally, from a Hilchos Mila perspective, Milas Akam is Kasher. Whereas the Tanur Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, Rabbi, he understands that Milas Akam is fundamentally Pasul, and that approach, it's a machlokas ha-tanam, but it does not appear to be a machlokas Amram. As you saw, the Amram begin to debate what's the pasuk? Which pasuk is the source for the psul of milas nachri? Machlokas Rav and Rabbi Yochanan. It's rare you get to hear Rav quoted by Doru Bar Papa. We associate him more with the Siyum than with the Gemara itself. Maybe if you make a Siyum a Sechaz of Avodah Zarah, you could have double kavana in the Doru Bar Papa. But Machlokas Rav and Rabbi Yochanan, which is the source? That makes it pretty clear that the Milas Akum should be pasul, and that is how we assume Lehalacha. That is how we assume the halacha. And the Gemara talks about, well, what's the nafkamina, what the pasuk is. The two options, either it's v'atas brisi tishmar, or himol yimol. Is it that the bris is only, the act of bris mila is supposed to be on someone who is supposed to be shomer bris, someone who is obligated to have a bris himself, that eliminates nachri, or do you say himol yimol, the only one who is considered to be mohol can perform a bris mila, and the nachri is not mohol. So the Gemara wants to figure, well, what does it matter whether it's a question of you have to be mechuyiv, or you have to be mohol? So first the Gemara thinks, well, you can have a Jew who is mechuyiv but not mohol. The Gemara says, no, he's considered to be a mohol. At least in the context, interesting, the Gemara quotes a Mishnah in the Darim, which is really more of a Lashem Bnei Adam issue, but we use the term Aril to refer to a Nachri, even if he happens to have a Mila, and we use the term Mohol to refer to a Jew, even if he happens to not have a Mila. So the Gemara says, a Nafkamina between the Rav and Yechin is not for a Nachri who is Mohol, nor for a Jew who is not Mohol. Ultimately, the Gemara says, a Jewish woman, that's the Shiloh, a Jewish woman has no chiyuv to perform bris mila on herself, certainly, but at the same time, she is kamanda mehila, and she has a status of being a mohol. What does that mean? So simply put, that means that there are other dinim, other than the mitzvah of mila, for which the status of being mohol, being aral, is relevant. That's an important point we may come back to later, a little bit later. So for instance, Pesach is coming, so we have Shloshim Yom Kodem Regel. So one of the dinim of Karban Pesach, and this comes up in the Psukim Parshas Bo, it comes up again in the Psukim in the fifth chapter of Yehoshua, when they have the first Karban Pesach after entering Eretz Israel, an Aral is not allowed to eat Karban Pesach. Aral is not allowed to eat Karban Pesach, or one whose children are Aralim, one whose Avadim are Aralim, is not allowed to eat Karban Pesach. So how about a woman? A woman never had a bris mila. Is a woman allowed to eat Karban Pesach? The answer is yes. Why? She never had a bris mila. The answer is, She doesn't have a status of an aral. She's an automatic mehula or automatic non-arela. So that seems to be what the Gemara is saying here. That another nafkamina, this notion that kamandam isha kamandam mehila damya, in addition to the fact that a woman is permitted to eat karban pesach, is that if you're going to say that the source is he for the psul nachri is he mol yimol, so you have to be mol, so isha command the mehila dam, it's according to Yechon, and a woman, a mohelas, is acceptable. According to Rav, this is atas brishi tishmar, it's not that the mohel has to be mohel, but as Yechon says, but rather according to Rav, it's that the mohel has to be someone who's chayev in mila. A woman is not chayev in mila, she doesn't need a mila, but she's not chayeves in mila. So that's why Rav would say that a Jewish woman is psula lamul, and Rabbi Yochanan would say a Jewish woman is kshera lamul. That, as you saw, a big machlokes rishonim. Tosas already has it. The second last Tosas on Chav Zayim and Aleph Ika. Last Tosas. The Tosas thinks that we should pass on like Rav. The Isha is a psula lamol. He says, but the Bahag, from the era of the Gaon and Balach's Gadol, thought that Isha is kshera lamol, like Rabbi Yochanan. And as you saw, that's an ongoing machlokas later on in Rishonim as well. The Rif and the Rush have a discussion about this. Whether we pass on like Rav or like Rabbi Yochanan. And then the third individual, whose status about kashrus or psulamul emerges from the sugya, in addition to nachri and isha, is a mumer la'arelus specifically. Someone who chose not to have a bris mila. The Gemara says, as we mentioned before, that Arele Yisrael are kemehili damu, and therefore are kashul amul, even according to Rabbi Yochanan. But the question is, Yeah, that's it. And Tosfos says, Tosfos raises the issue in Ika Benayo. Tosfos says, how about a mumer la relos? Maybe a reli Yisrael is just someone who legitimately doesn't have a bris milah. Meisu echach machmas milah. We'll come to that. And there could be cases where mishum sakana, there would be a Jewish man who is not allowed to have a bris milah performed upon him because of sakana. There's a concern of hemophilia, which Chazal were well aware was a genetic disorder, a genetic link. Hemophilia is when the body has lacks the capacity or has insufficient capacity to clot. And therefore, any cut is potentially life-threatening. I think if you look on the websites of some of the hemophilia foundations, they point to the Talmud in Masechet Shabbos as the earliest recorded source indicating the genetic link, the genetic basis. The Gemara says, Mesu Echo Machos Mila, if two or three, maybe we'll get to that later on, Machlok is how many, but if two or three brothers in a family pass away after having Bris Mila, so then you suspect, you have reason to suspect hemophilia, and none of the other brothers will have a Bris Mila. And the Gemara, as a matter of fact, even says, and this is what's particularly intriguing, the Gemara is definitely the first source for recognizing that this is passed down through mothers. Even says first cousins, if they share mothers, also create a concern. If two sisters, two or three sisters, each lost a child after Bris Mila, so then all the other sisters are not going to do Bris Mila for any of their children. That's a Gemara. So that's a situation where you have a Jew, a Jewish man, who does not have a Bris Mila properly. Properly does not have a Bris Mila. Mesu Echa Machos Mila. The question, so he's definitely a Reli Yisrael Kamandam Hilu. So a Jew who's Mesu Echov Machos Milu, who legitimately does not bris Mila, can definitely perform a bris on another baby. He could become a Mohel. The question is, how about a Mumer La Relis, where he's doing the wrong thing? He should have a bris and chooses not to. So that's already, so Tosfos says, well, maybe we should be Machsher, other Rishonim are not so convinced. The Rishonim are not so convinced. You saw the Beis Yosef quotes several who think it's a problem. He says quotes the Beit HaManoach, he quotes the Itur, but the Gra says that Tosfos seems to think that's kosher. It's a question of how you read the Gemara. The footnote 13 in the Tur, in the Machon Devarah Tur, so they point out there's a machlokas achronim how to read the Rambam in terms of Mumer La'arelus. So let's take a look. Let's see where everything filters out in Shulchan Aruch. So Shulchan Aruch says here, Reish Tamach Dalet, Sif Aleph, Akol Ksher Lamul, Afilu Eved Isha Katan. So Shulchan Aruch says, number one, Isha is Ksher. Isha is Ksher. Tosfos is taking the position of Rabbi Yochanan. Shulchan Aruch, rather, is taking the position of Rabbi Yochanan. And then Shulchan Aruch goes on to say, Arel Yisrael, Shemesu Echach Machmas Mila. Or if you have an Arel Yisrael who lost brothers to Mila. Not that he's an Arel, but he's a legitimately an Arel Beheter. That's what the Shacharei says right away. Miskavim Lahafer Bris would not be the same. Then the Shulchan Aruch goes on to say, and this is the position that the Rif and the Rush talk about, Isha's Ksheirav and Yeshis Shal Gadol Shiyadei Lamul Hu Kodim Lakulam. If you had access to Yisrael Gadol, we would not go with any of these individuals. We would not go with the Eved or the Isha or the Katan. And the Ramah is even stronger. Yeshom Yishal Otamo V'chein Nogin Lahader Achar Ish. If you have no other options, so then we would allow a mohalas. But whenever there's an option for a male mohel, then we would avoid that. And again, the Ramah goes on to say, we'll come back to Akko in a moment, the Ramah goes on to say further on, even more clearly, the Shachet made a diuk in the language of the Rambam, in language of Shulchan Aruch, that Arel is only allowed to mal if he's a legitimate Arel. Mesa Echabachos Mila, so the Shachet be medayik, as opposed to someone who's miskaven lahaf for bris, or someone who's choosing to not do bris mila. The Ramah, the second line of the Ramah, is even more explicit about that. The Mumar called Tarakula Osha, who Mumar la Arelos, Dino Ka'akum. The Mumar la Arelos, he's choosing not to do a bris mila, he's violating b'miskaven, so he's dino kenachri and is not allowed to perform a bris, as well as a mumar l'chol ha'tarakula. A Jew is a generally non-observant. The Machal Shabbos for Hesir. So again, that's based on the din of Meshumad, of the Murmur L'chol Tarakula. So you saw the Darke Moshe. Ramon Darke Moshe quotes Arzuroz Masupik about that. And that's why he says here it's not acceptable. And there's a long Rebbe Akiva Eger, a very long Rebbe Akiva Eger. He's rarely so long. He's not so convinced that a Murmur L'Arelus should be puzzle. He's not so convinced. The Gra already wasn't so convinced. So the Shechter quotes, in terms of this question, it does come up sometimes. If the only mohel available is a Jew who's not a Shomer Shabbos. So the Shechter tells a story, someone who I think was roughly contemporary of his, maybe even older, the Talmud of the Rav, who was serving, it sounds like he was a chaplain, a U.S. Army chaplain, in the Philippines. They were the only, he and his wife were the only Shomer Torah mitzvahs on the base, probably on the island. There was a doctor, there was an army medic who was a non-Shomer Shabbos Jew who was competent to do a bris mila. So the shaila was, he's the only option. He's the only option, or is he? So apparently the Rav quoted that his father's approach in terms of should you allow a Machal Shabbos to do a bris mila, Yisrael Machal Shabbos bris mila like Rebbe Akiva Eger, or not like the Ramah, so he said his father's approach was it depends who the family is. In other words, in this case, the Rav told this Talmud of his, you're in the Philippines for however many months and eventually you'll come back to a Jewish community. So wait, don't rely on the Milas Machal Shabbos. Wait until you come back, and then you'll have a religious mohel. But the Rav said his father's approach was to follow the machmer like the Ramah. If it's a frum family where you're confident that once they get back to civilization, they're going to do a bris mila. He said, but if you have a non-observant family, but they're open to doing bris mila right now, b'shmini, but if you tell them wait, it may never happen. So then he thought it made sense to be Mako like Rebbe Akiva Eger because you're risking not having a bris mila whatsoever. So that was Moshe Soloveitchik's pshara in terms of this fourth issue. So again, we spoke about issue number two is Isha, issue number three is Mumar La'arelus, and issue number four was the Mumar L'chol Tarakula. But let's come back to issue number one, which is where the city began, which is Nachri. So the Shulchan Aruch here says, that's from the Gemara. We paskin based on Rav and Gechem like Rida Nasi. That's the language of the Rambam. If he did do a Mila, so then you don't have to do another Mila. And the Ramah quotes, as the Tur quotes, that the Smag said, the Sefer Mitzvahs Gadol is one of the major Sefer Halacha written by the Bayatosis, or Moshe Mikutzi. He said that you do have to do a Hatafas Dambris. And you probably saw there's a big machlokas whether the Rambam disagrees with that or not. The Smag is clear that Milas Akam requires Hatafas Dambris. And the question is, what's the Rambam's position? So the Beis Yosef says, the Torah makes it sound like they're arguing. And I don't think so. The Rambam said, the Torah says, Rambam said, Milas Akam, you don't have to do another bris milah. But the Smag says you have to do a Tavas Dambras. So the Beis Yosef says, read the Torah, and the Bacham also makes that point. We read the Torah. It sounds like the Torah is setting them up as in opposition to one another. In other words, the Torah understood the Rambam. The Rambam said, you don't have to do another bris. That means, well, how would you even do another bris? There's nothing left to cut. So the Rambam meant, you don't have to do a Tavas Dambras. And the Beis Yosef thinks, he says, I don't think that's what the Rambam meant. I don't think that's what the Rambam meant. I think the Rambam just meant you don't have to do another. If there's any or ha'orla left, you don't have to cut it off. Well, that's coming up later in the siman and begin to starting with Sif Gimel. Shulchan begins to discuss the practicalities of the Maisa Mila, and we'll see that a bris is kosher even if you don't remove all of the or ha'orla. If you have basar achofas rov ha'atah, if you remove rov, so that suffices to be a kosher milah. The machlokas we don't know exactly what that means. We'll get to the details, but for now it suffices to recognize that you can have some skin tags of arla remaining and it's still a kosher bris. That's the Beis Yosef says. Rambam just meant if the nachri did a milah, don't think there's any value in going back and trimming away some of the remaining tzitzin shein makan. But the Beis Yosef says, Rambam didn't mean to deny that you're going to do hatafas dam bris. As a matter of fact, you look at the smag, so the smag seems to say, you don't have to do another mila, but you do hatafas dam bris. And it's worth noting that I mentioned before the smag, Sefer Mitzvah's Gadol of Moshe Kutzi is one of the significant Sifri Halach of the Baal Yatosos. Part of his significance is that he was the first, I believe he's assumed to be the first, to really introduce Mishnas HaRambam into Torah Ashkenaz in a serious way. So it's not always the case, and there certainly are machloksim between the Rambam and the Smag, but it's not surprising. You expect to find a lot of consistency between Rambam and the Smag. And certainly, if the Smag says, well, don't do another chituch, but you do a tavas dam bris, it sounds like that's an echo of the Rambam. Saying, yeah, the Rambam said, don't cut off. But of course, it sounds as if the Smag himself is probably giving a perish on the Rambam. So that's a machlokas. That's the machlokas how to understand the Rambam. Halacha lemasa, we definitely do expect a hatafas dam bris. I take that back. I'm sorry. This is where we spoke too soon. The smag definitely requires a hatafas dam bris. And what the Rambam's position is a machlokas. Again, the Torah versus Beis Yosef, and the Gra appears to line up with the Torah also. If you take a look in the Beirah Gra, then there's a further machlokas. There's a machlokas how to read the Rashba, and there's a machlokas achronim between the Ramah and the Pesrei Tshuva quoting the Shagas Aryeh. So what's the machlokas about the Rashba? So machlokas about the Rashba, as you saw, is that the Rama goes on to quote the Shuvas HaRashba that the Beis Yosef has, that we had already touched on in Reish Samach Beis. The Tinuk Shehutzruchu L'mulo Tochas. Here the Rama quotes it. We spoke about it in Reish Samach Beis, but here the Rama actually quotes it. A situation we had to do a bris milah toches because of sakana. So they asked the Rashba, is it preferable that some sort of infection on the arla, whatever it is? The doctor says, if you don't remove the arla, the baby may die. Don't dilly-dally until day 8. You may not have a living baby at day 8. So the Rashba says, obviously you should do the bris milah right away. Because nefesh is docha everything else. But he says, but don't think you're getting a bris milah out of this. And he says, it doesn't really matter. They asked him, does it matter whether you have Yisrael or Nachri? He said, it doesn't really matter. Either way, Either way, it's you're not going to mekayim anything. Either way, there's no gain. There's no gain. There's no gain by doing a having Yisrael do the mila if it is toch ches. So we'd already touched on this earlier because Reish Tamach Beis in the discussion of timing, the Rambam might have been of the opinion that you remember that the toch ches your yotze malo toch ches, even though malo balayla is lo yotze malo toch ches, Rambam might be of the opinion you are yotze, and the shach had been vociferously opposed to that. The shach said toch ches is the same as balayla, it's the wrong time, it's a zero. But the Rambam appears to have been of the opinion that if you that mila balayla is not a ma'isa mila, but mila balayla, particularly since we hold that laila is an issue, we paskin the Gemara's machlokas about it. We spoke about that. We paskin that mila balayla is an issue even la'achar ches. That's just a definition of the ma'isa mila. That part of the definition of a ma'isa mila is that the mila bayom. Mila bayom. So mila balayla is a zero, but mila toches, the Ramah holds against the shach, that's too early. It's kodem zman ha-mitzvah, but it is a valid ma'isa mila. It's just not done in a way that you'll be yotze. Not done in a way that you would be yotze. And that's why he says, so you weren't mekayim a mitzvah, toch ches, but the child will be a mohol. That's what he appears to hold. And that raises the question that the Ramah here, and this will be some of us we're talking about over the course of the week during the afternoon Seder, the Ramah here quotes this Rashba, who says, Toh Ches is a zero. It doesn't matter if you have a Jew or a non-Jew do it, it's all a zero. It's all a zero. It doesn't really matter. Lo Mikri Mila. What does that mean? What does that mean? It's a Mamash Astira. The Ramah in Reish Tamach Beis to the toches yotze, and here he says, "Ah, toches. If you have to do a toches because of pukach nefesh, it doesn't matter whether a Jew does it or a non-Jew does it." So how do you make sense of that? So that's a machlokas on the page between the Be'er HaGola and the Be'er HaGra. Be'er HaGra says, "Yep." Yeah. He says the Ramah here is contradicting what he wrote earlier. Shach wasn't happy with what he wrote earlier, so maybe the Ramah changed his mind. But the Be'er HaGola seeks to, I believe was a great-grandfather of the Gra, he seeks to explain it. He appears, you have to figure out, we were talking over the course of the week, afternoon, said, how would it work this out? The Be'er HaGola by the circle. So he seems to say, maybe you could, the two are coherent. Maybe the two are coherent. Why? So what he different ways to read the Be'er HaGola, but it could be that what he's saying is maybe the two are coherent because he didn't say in Reish Tamach Beis you're Mekayim any mitzvah. He said in Reish Tamach Beis that the child will be a mohol. And this goes back to the point we made before. That there's other significance to Mila aside from the mitzvah of Mila. Mohol is a status which has relevance for karbanos and so on and so forth. So the child could be a mohol even if I was and has no ongoing chiyuv mila even if I was not makayim mila the way that I did it. So that's what the Be'er HaGola seems to be saying, that the toches it's a valid ma'isa mila, and therefore when the child becomes 8 days old he will have the status of a mohol, but you are not makayim anything. So that might be what he's saying here. That might be the way the Ramah is quoting the Rashba. The Rashba himself may not have held this way, but the way the Ramah is quoting the psak of the Rashba is perhaps, as the Be'er HaGola suggests, it's a little difficult in the language. The lumdus is exciting, but fitting into the words of the Ramah is a little bit more of a challenge. That maybe he's saying like this. So toches, you can do a toches, you're not going to be able to say anything anyways. Why does it matter whether you have a Jew or a non-Jew? What does it matter whether you're going to have a Jew or a non-Jew? Either way, there's no kiyum ha-mitzvah in advance. It's true that if you have a milas akum, you're going to require a tafas dan bris later. And then you do a tafas dan bris b'yom ha-shmini, and then the child will be a mahal at that point. So there may be, you're not makayin any mitzvah, and the end he'll be a mahal. So the Rashba says, it doesn't really matter. Now, the Rashba himself seems to have held, again, machlok is what the Rashba held about, machlok is beisosim, the shach, what the Rashba himself held about hatafas dan bris, whether you require hatafas dan bris on a milas akum, or there's no room for hatafas dan bris. But that perhaps is the way the Ramah is quoting the Rashba. Okay, certainly the Bir HaGraz approach is a simpler approach. So it fits more easily with the language here. That although the Ramah had formulated that surprising position, Reish Tamach Beis, that Toches is it's going to be a valid Mila, the simple reading of the Ramah here is that he changed his mind. It's a simple language Ramah, like the Bir HaGraz, but again, the Bir HaGola does work on how to defend the how you can put the two approaches of Ramah together. There's a long discussion in Ramah that the Beis Yosef quotes a lot of Rishon about this. What can you allow to back out? A lot of back out of Mo, not a lot of back out of Mo, different situations. What do you do if you had one Mo coming and then he said he thought he wasn't coming and he got another one? What do you do in terms of going back to the first one? A number of interesting issues. Certainly, as Ramah stresses, it is important. The lechatchila, yesh lo adam lachazor lahaderach ha'mol bal bris hayoser tov v'tzadik. It's a hidur to seek out a mole and a sandik that are bal bris is a sandik. They're the greatest tzadikim possible. Interesting. You look back in the Beis Yosef. The language is a Yehudi Tov. I'd say look back in the Dark Moshe. The language is a Yehudi Tov, a good Jew. Doesn't sound like a Hebrew terminology. A good Yid. Maybe he's a back translating from Yiddish. More going on later at the end about Sandikos. Yeah, Sif Beis. Let's talk briefly about Sif Beis. It's about Kol Molin. Also, a quote from the Rambam. Sif and Sif Beis are both based on the Rambam's Perek Beis Halacha Aleph. That you can use any type of tool. You're allowed to use any type of tool to do the Bris Mila. It could be a sharp stone. It could be a sharp piece of glass. Sounds a little dangerous, but obviously, if you're doing it properly, the one thing you cannot use is Kruma Shalkana. There might be wooden, certain types of wooden or plant-based, sharp edges where there's a concern, where there is a safety concern. There's a safety concern of splinters, Rahman Atzlan. That's obviously a very bad situation. But other than that, that's based on the sugya in Chulin, in the Shechita context. Yeah, any type of cutting edge. Rav Shechter points out some recent poskim raise the question of whether you can use some other mechanism other than cutting to remove the arha arla. If you use a chemical that removes the arha arla without cutting it, that also sounds like a dangerous business. And who would want to do such a thing? So apparently, over the last couple of decades, the idea came up about using a laser, doing laser surgery to remove the arla without bleeding for a hemophiliac baby. That's interesting, Shaila. That's interesting, Shaila. And that's an application of this. So that's not, you're not really cutting in the usual sense. It's not using, you're not using a sharp edge. So that's a discussion amongst the poskim, is that permissible or not? So I think it said may poskim assume if there's no other way to do a bris milah in a hemophiliac baby, they have nothing to lose. Either it's valid or it's invalid. But if it's invalid, the alternative would be not do a bris milah at all. So if it's that or nothing, so then I think many poskim, sounds like many poskim would advise using the non-cutting laser approach to bris milah for the mesu achav machmas milah. And then finally the Shulchan Aruch here quotes from the Rambam that although meikar adin you could use whatever, but mitzvah namuvchar lamul bebarzel bein besakin bein mesparayim, it would be best. It's ideal to use metal. It's ideal to use iron. Although any sharp edge is fine. The Gra points to the opening sugya in Blaz Damila where they talk about making a knife. Making the metal knife in order to do a bris milah. Rabbi Lezer, Tanur Rabbi Lezer, who holds the machshir milah dochen Shabbos, he talks about you doing many milachas in order to make a metal knife. So apparently that's the ideal item. And then the Shulchan quotes to the Rambam that the ideal is to use iron either as a single blade or as scissors. But the minig Yisrael is to do a milah dafka with a single blade. So what's that about? So in Mar Makomos, I sent you to take a look at Begin Hilchos Isha. The guys who want to Kiddushin and Mila are both life cycle events, but I had the Mar Makomos for those who are interested over the course of winter break about some of the practical issues in Kiddushin, but not the same. Yeah, but the common thread between the Rambam, the end of Perek Gimel of Ishos, and this Rambam Gimel Perek Beis of Mila is a mysterious minhag. Why nagu lamul besakin, and why at the end of Parakimol does the Rambam write that the nagu lakadosh, nagu kol Yisrael lakadosh bekesav b'shav bekesav. The Rambam there quotes the Mishnah. And there are three kinyane kiddushin which are valid, kesav, shtar, and bia. And the Rambam says that quotes the Gemara in the first parak kiddushin. That kiddush bia are effective but inappropriate. Rav Mangir Mand Bakash bia, he says, but kesef and shtar are both perfectly fine ways to go. But the minig is kesef or shava kesef as opposed to shtar. So Shechter likes to quote Professor Asaf Simcha Asaf, who's a historian, did a lot of work on Gaonim and on Rambam as well. And he develops a theme that I think Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik, in some of his essays, sees as well, which is that we know that the Rambam was very involved as a Jewish leader in the fight against the Karam. When he came to Egypt, Rambam was born in Spain and made his way across northern Africa to Eretz Yisrael, then back ultimately settles in Egypt. And one of the main rabbinic, sort of larger rabbinic projects he had was when he arrived in Egypt, the Karaites, who rejected the Torah Shel Peh, they were the establishment elites, and the Jews who accepted the Torah Shel Peh were made to feel like the second-class hoi polloi. The Rambam had intellectual credentials second to none, and he was not, obviously, a Karaite. He was very much a believer in both Torah Shel Chsav and Torah Shel Peh. And he tilted the balance of power very, very significantly, the balance just of intellectual prestige very significantly. He fought vigorously against the influence of the Karam. Now, there were many, many issues that had to do with bris milah, had to do with health. Karaites were ignored health. Chaim Soloveitchik, many years ago I saw an essay which at the time was unpublished. I don't know if he has since published it or not, but at the time it was an unpublished essay by Chaim Soloveitchik, in which he developed the idea that the structure of the Rambam's Hilchos Shabbos, a lot of strange things about the way the Rambam organizes Hilchos Shabbos. There's a whole slew of sort of side topics, and many of them are Divrei Rabbanan, from Perek Beis through Perek Vav. Perek Aleph, which introduces there is a law of doing Malacha, sort of what you expect to find in Perek Aleph Hilchos Shabbos. But you would have expected the next step would be to talk about what are the Malachas. But the Rambam only gets to that in Perek Zayin. Perek Beis of Pikuch Nefesh, and then Prakim Gimel Dalet Hei Vav, Ar Hatzmana Hadlakas Neris, a slew of of dinim, which don't, it's very un-Rambam-like. You expect the Rambam to be, you know, he's usually incredibly organized. The next step, once you define it as an Isser Malacha, we've spoken about the Dover Shem Iskam and so on and so forth, Parag Alf, Parag Bay should have been, and here Lam Tez Malachas, or what Parag Zion is. And then also the language of the Rambam at the end, in the last Parag, but Kav V'Oneg, a lot of curiosities. Again, it's never about content. The content is what you expect, but the presentation, the formulation, is striking. So Chaim Soloveitchik develops the idea that the Rambam was doing two things simultaneously. He was doing what he always does in the Mishnah Torah, which is to present a compendium of the Torah Shebaal Peh, of an organized presentation of the Maskanas of Torah Shebaal Peh. But at the same time that he was doing that, there's also a subtext, without taking away from the primary goal, he also was simultaneously, there was a subtext of polemic against the Karaites. And he points out that the way in which the Rambam stresses Kavod Onog Shabbos at the end is a direct attack on the Karaite, cold, dark, sad Shabbos. The Karam read Lo Sevaru Eish in next week's parasha literally as meaning not just you can't light a fire, but you can't have any fires on. So their Shabbos was cold and dark. And Bechlal, their Shabbos was very much like a Yom Kippur mode. It's a very somber day. I don't know if it's Lahavdil. The Karaites were Apikursim, so not Lahavdil, but they were Jewish, but Apikursim. But their approach to Shabbos is perhaps reminiscent. You read about the Puritans, or Sunday in early America. It was also a very, very serious, somber, frightening day. So that was the Karaite Shabbos. So the Rambam is Perek Lamed is a full-throated rejection of the Karaite apikursis about Shabbos. And the Chaim suggests that all those topics in the opening program also, starting with Pikuach Nefesh, which the Karaites rejected. The Karaites would not be Mechal Shabbos even if someone's going to die. The Rambam's language is very, very popular. The way he phrases it, that the Dine, he doesn't just say Pikuach Nefesh is Doch Shabbos. He gives you flavor and perspective and tone and mood. Rambam says that the Dine Torah are not meant to be evil, and they're not, Baruch Shalom is not out to get us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us, and so on and so forth. And even the fact that when he goes through the Lama Tes Malachas, he divides them, he goes through all the Malachas Darais, and then he goes through all the Malachas again, listing the Dine Drabbanan, which is not typical Rambam style. You would have expected him to go through Malacha by Malacha, give me the Dine Darais and the Dine Drabbanan. Give me all the Darais and Drabbanans of Chorish, give me all the Darais and Drabbanans of Zoraya, and so forth. He says, Chaim says, that too, he's making a point of the Drabbanan in their own right, as, again, as part of this polemic against the Karaites. So the Hilchos Shabbos as a whole, the structure of Hilchos Shabbos is one huge pushback against the Karaites. And then there are subtle points elsewhere as well. So one is, Kfarnagu Kol Yisrael Akash B'Kesef, or B'Shava Kesef. That's because the Rambam already said, both in Parak Aleph, beginning of Parak Aleph, and immediately before that, the end of Parak Gimel, that Kesef is based on Torah Shebaal Peh. Kesef is Divrei Sofrim. Unlike Bia and to extend Shtar, which are more rooted in the Psukim, Kesef is Gzeir Shava. So that's why we bedafka go out of our way to be Mekadesh with a Kinyan that's based on Torah Shebaal Peh, to identify and to articulate that we reject the approach of the Karam, much as the Tanam have the idea of Lahotzi Miliban Shalat Stukim, like Ksir Saomer, and other times the way they organized Ksir Saomer, Leil, the first night of Chol Moed Pesach, the way they organized the Sreifas Paraduma, but Dafka, they go out of the way to make it clear they were not accepting the Tzedukim's rejection of Torah Shebaal Peh, and the Karaites, many centuries later, were the intellectual descendants of those Tzedukim. So this is also Lahotzi Miliban Shal Karam, and that may be the approach here as well. The Nogu Lamul Besaken, the Shulchan makes it very clear, meaning that the point is a single blade as opposed to scissors. So the Karaites, apparently, the Pasuk in the fifth parak of Yehoshua, Aselecha Chorvos Tzurim, what are Chorvos Tzurim? Blades. So the Karaites understood or misunderstood, whatever it is, but the Karaites interpreted that Yehoshua was using scissors. Not cherev, but chorvos. And they, therefore, insisted on only using scissors to do a bris milah. So, no'agul amul b'saken means that Jews who accept the Torah Shalpeh developed the minhag to dafka avoid using scissors. Eker din, scissors are fine. Single blade, double blade, it's all the same. But the minhag Yisrael developed to avoid using scissors, to only use a straight blade, a single blade, to demonstrate lahotzi miliban shel hakaram. One other issue in terms of equipment, which we're not going to take up just yet, but actually, Sif Beis is about Bakol Molin, about the clay hamila. But there is something coming up which we'll get to once we get to Metzitzas. As I mentioned before, we're gonna leave off here. Mitzvah next week we'll pick up with Sif Gimel and on, which is the Ofan Hamila, the steps of Mila Priya Metzitza. So Metzitza, we'll get to the making sure to remove additional blood after the act of the removal of the Arha Arla and the Arha Priya. So there is some discussion about whether blood flow is an essential part of the Bris Mila. And that raises the question, and maybe we'll talk some more next week. The other equipment question, other than what are you using to make the incision, is a question of clamps. I think it's been for many centuries, Mohalim, and maybe even more, Mohalim use a guard, some sort of guard that they slip on, they sort of pull the Arha Arla up off of the gid, and then put on a guard to make sure that the rest of the baby's by the Evra Zachris is protected. The question is, how about if it's not just a loose guard, how about if it's a very tight clamp? And there are several different clamps that have been developed over the course of the 20th century that either reduced or eliminated blood flow, blood loss from the incision. And the question is, is that a good idea? Is that a bad idea? So we'll get to that in terms of whether blood flow is a necessary element of Bris Mila. So those are the second equipment issue, other than what you use to cut, is guards versus clamps. So that we'll get to Bli Neder next week. Rabbi Yoshe Kayach.